As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, welcome back to the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. My name is Dustin O'Hara, and I'm here with my brother and co-host, Devin.
Hello.
And this is episode 40 of the Art of Craftsmanship podcast. Pretty Ooh. Crazy. 40 episodes. Devin, what do you got for us today?
Some context for this quote, because it would make sense without it, but you got to kind of know.
Right.
This is Matthew McConaughey talking about his beloved city of Austin.
Okay.
Nobody's too good, and everybody's good enough.
Huh. That Austin.
Yeah. I love that. I love when people talk highly of their hometowns, I think.
Right, yeah.
Even if I've been to Texas just once going through, but I've never been to Austin. And I just, when someone says something like that, you get like, I mean, that's McConaughey too. He has all those type of things. He comes up with all those like little wisdom pieces. But
nobody's too good.
And everybody's good enough. It's such a nice... When you think of that, you're like, man, sounds like a great place to live. No one's too fancy or hoity-toity, and everybody's good enough. I really like that.
Yeah, I like that, too. That's really nice. It's like, it kind of warms you. You know, like, oh, that does make sense, you know? Because everywhere you go, you get a full range of people. So, you know, and obviously everywhere you go and you meet, you know, you make judgments on people all the time, and I think, to have someone who's from a place to speak about a place, that is kind of nice. It reminds me of when I was in grad school in New Hampshire, one of the students that was in the grad year with me, Alan Rushing, who's another artist, and maybe I'll have to shout him out. I'll put his name in the his Instagram in the in the show notes. But he was another painter, and he and I – so I – We are from Baltimore, but he was not from Baltimore, but he had gone to MICA, which is the Maryland Institute College of Art, for his post-bac, I think it was. Post-bac, post-baccalaureate, which is like between undergrad and grad school. So it's kind of like he was a little bit older. He was in his early 40s when he went to MICA, and then, you know, early to mid-40s when he's in grad school with me. But he did his post-bac study at MICA, post-baccalaureate, and then he went to grad school at University of New Hampshire, where I went.
Gotcha.
And he reiterated the fact, one of the things that I love about Baltimore, and one of Baltimore's kind of nicknames is Charm City.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think the world sees Baltimore through the lens of, like, The Wire and the riots.
Right.
And the murders, and, you know, I think you could say that about any big city, but, you know, like Detroit, things. But he kind of reiterated, he's not from Baltimore, he's from the West Coast, he's lived all over the place, and he did reiterate that Baltimore had a charm that no other place had had the same way Baltimore had.
Mm.
It's like the little different neighborhoods were pretty specific, and, you know, the Inner Harbor and the teams and the, you know, the different, like, cultures and stuff and around. He said there was something really, really interesting about Baltimore, and so it was cool to hear someone else who wasn't from there kind of back me up on my also claim. I love the fact that it's called Charm City because it is, it has a charm to it, you know, that I haven't found as much in other cities. And I haven't spent a ton of time in other cities, but, you know, I like Charm City.
Yeah, no, it's one of those places. It's kind of the perfect size. I mean,
right.
Obviously, any city or town over a million people, it gets, obviously there's good and bad everywhere, but
right.
It's kind of the perfect size where it's not too big, and almost everyone can kind of give you directions to one side of town or the other.
Right, yeah.
And, you know, 10 minutes drive, you're all the way on the other side. So it's,
right.
Yeah. But I don't know. I love that. I was
yeah.
listening to someone quoting him. So now I'm quoting someone quoting Matthew McConaughey. Just the idea. I like that. And he's gone. I think he might run for whatever Congress or something down there or mayor or something. But he,
yeah.
I think he even came out with like a list of things. Like you kind of, we want everyone to come since everyone's rushing there now.
Yeah, right.
But he's saying you have to, these are things you kind of have to do. You have to be in this mindset, and I think that's a great mindset to have.
Yeah.
You're not better than anyone, but come on in. We'll take care of you.
Yeah.
And we appreciate you, like right off the bat, which is it's a nice yeah. thing.
Nobody's too good. Everybody's good enough. Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that is. Yeah. That's nice. Yeah, it's very comforting. You're like, I want to go to a place like that.
Yeah.
You know, people are just, you know, that, I guess, embodies that, like, acceptance. You know, they're willing to accept you. Because nobody feels like they're way above you and nobody feels like they're way below you. You know,
right.
Everyone is just people. We're all right. like together. We're all like living the same life and having the same struggles and, you know, trying to get by and do the best for ourselves and our families. And
yeah. And that's you know, you can say that's a Southern thing in the U.S., kind of that hospitality part. Yeah. Slow things down. Try to be nicer to people. But also, Austin has that good mix of art and Texas.
Yeah, music, yeah.
Music, art, and Texas. You know, so they have, like, yeah, they've got it all. There's such a cool, yeah, I'd like to go. So hopefully one day we'll head down there.
Yeah,
that'd be great.
Right on, yeah. We're not moving the art of craftsmanship to Texas.
No.
I was like, I found this cool house, and, you know, it's got two sides to it.
going to Austin, no, it's not. Austin. We don't need that scene to shoot videos from a basement.
Right, yeah. Or an outside smithy. Hey.
Hey.
Oh, man, I've been loving it, though. I've been loving, like, I set up the lights, which I posted on Instagram. I guess that's something that I did since last week. I was thinking about things that I did this week. And I was like, I haven't really done anything
right
outside of, you know, living my life and working and, you know, being a parent and a father, and, you know, and a husband, you know?
Right.
But, other than that, like I've, yeah, I got all the lights, went to Harbor Freight, I think on Sunday, and picked up two strings of the hanging light bulbs and then two clamp lamps and strung it all up. And I have, the end of the string of lights is right in the middle, the front middle of the roof, or, you know, the inside, the ceiling of the smithy. And so I put a three-way plug on the end of it. And so I plugged in those two clamp lights to that. And they're on 6 foot, you know, extension. So they're able to both go to the two front corners.
Yeah.
And basically from that position, we can move them anywhere around. Those two can go in any, you know, any direction. So we'll be able to light that space really well.
Yeah. It's plenty of light now. It looks great.
Yeah, it's going to be cool. And that also leaves me with one additional plug there, too. So if, you know, we're grinding or something, I'll have that plug overhead. So maybe I'll run an extension or something from it and put it down on the side or something. But
yeah,
it's cool. I'm excited.
Yeah, I wanted to do a quick little rant before we get into our stuff.
All right.
That has nothing to do with anything.
Oh, fine.
Other than I'm driving to work today and I'm listening to a podcast. And the person says, you have to watch this show. And I don't even remember what show it was because I was so mad after they did it. Or maybe it was a movie. You have to watch this. And they're explaining how great it is. I'm like into it. I'm like, yeah, that does sound good. And then he says, it's got such a good twist. Then it's ruined for me. You're giving, if you come to me and you say, you have to watch this. And then you say, it's got such a great twist. Now all I'm
ruined it.
If I know it's coming, it's not a twist,
right?
It's like someone saying, "Hey, we're gonna have a surprise for you like a surprise party for you today.
Right.
And then,
yeah.
And it's like, well, then they're like, well, you don't really know what the surprise is or where it is, but I know it's coming.
Right.
So I expect it.
Oh, man.
It's got such a good twist. Like, you've ruined it for me now. So now I'm waiting for the twist. And if you're waiting for the twist, it doesn't do what a twist should do. A twist should come out of nowhere and surprise you and make a movie better, not waiting for it. Like Sixth Sense or something where you're waiting for the twist. Like, oh God.
Right. Yeah. And that's actually like with M. Night Shyamalan movies, you have that, you kind of expect there to be a twist because that's kind of what they all have.
Yeah.
So that's different, right? That you go into it knowing it, like, yeah, you know, okay, it's going to have a twist. And then you're, then it's kind of a game. Can I figure out what the twist is? But
if it's just some show, I think it was maybe like some drug mafia show or whatever. You say, oh, it's great. Yeah. It's got this, this, and this. It's got a great twist at the end. I'm like, I'm not going to watch it now. You've ruined it for me.
Thanks for nothing.
I'm just waiting for a twist asshole every corner.
Oh, man, that's funny.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to say, the terrible thing you had to go through this week, and I was thinking of some dog quotes, and when you look at dog quotes, they're all either corny or so obvious,
right?
But which is such a what's the word? I guess it's such a great thing to say about dogs that everyone knows how great they are.
Right.
Like, yeah, you doing a quote about how great a dog is or how much we love dogs is so obvious.
Right, yeah.
That it's like, and that's such a compliment to everyone's dogs.
Right.
And it's like obvious that it's man's best friend. They're obvious that we all love them, that we,
right,
that the dog would do anything for you. Anyone who's had a dog knows that. So I was like, I'm not going to do a dog quote.
Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, like you said, it is obvious, and, you know, the majority of the world, I mean, you know, dogs are man's oldest companions.
Right.
You know, like, as far back, you know, they were the first kind of domesticated animal, I think. And yeah, so, right, exactly. It's, you know, everyone knows that. And if you guys, I think most of you follow along on Instagram if you're listening, and so you have seen that I posted that our dog, Sadie, who also, if you follow the videos on YouTube, well, you know that she is in a lot of our videos, has been in tons of videos, more than anyone else other than myself, that she passed away on Monday or Tuesday. We woke, she was kind of weird and disconcerted Monday night, and she couldn't settle down, and then kind of woke us up over the night kind of howling. And then in the morning, same thing, was doing the same thing. And kind of, we knew that she was getting close to the end. She was an old dog. She was almost 15, I guess 14 and a half. Mm. And it hurt her back a couple months ago, maybe 6 months ago or so, slipped in our kitchen and pinched a nerve in her back. And so we took her to the doctor then. And since then, she hasn't been able to walk all that well. She can get around fine, but she would slip and fall. And so we knew she was kind of on her way out. And so fortunately, we called the vet and to let them know we needed to bring her in to put her down. We could tell by that point that was about 8 o'clock in the morning. They didn't have an appointment until 11 o'clock. And, you know, what am I going to say? I'm going to argue with them, being like, you know, what do you mean you don't have an appointment? I was just like, I was like, is that really the earliest you have? And it's 3 hours from now.
Right.
And it was. Yeah, so she was like, yeah, tough. I'm so sorry. Yeah. And at that point, you know, Sadie had been, she was kind of crying in pain every 30 seconds or so. And it was pretty tough. It was a rough couple hours, but
right.
Fortunately for us, because it had happened kind of early in the morning, I stayed home from work. My wife stayed home from work, and we kept our daughter Corinne home from school, or, you know, told her she didn't have to do virtual learning, you know, just so we could all be with her in the morning. And then, at 10 o'clock she passed, and maybe for about the last half an hour, she wasn't really crying in pain. She was just kind of slowly fading. We could tell, like, she wasn't really looking out of her eyes. They were kind of twitching. And then she passed at 10 o'clock. So we didn't actually have to take her to the vet and have her put down, which is a blessing because
yeah,
this way we were able to be with her in her house. She was comfortable in her bed. We were all there. We were petting her the whole time and talking to her, and we were able to grieve there together. Because right. my wife, Nicole, she had already said, like, I don't think I can go into the room. I don't think I can go into the vet while we put her down, you know. So it was already going to be me going in and taking her in, and then, you know, my wife and daughter would have had to say goodbye beforehand. So this way it was, like, much better. So.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Yeah, so it was tough. That was a tough day. But, you know, like I said, we took off and we took her out, and we went and buried her out in the woods behind our place, where, like, a place that we'd walk with her all the time. So it was really nice, and did, like, a nice stone thing on top of it. And we got these two nice stones, one that my daughter found that was kind of near where we dug the hole. And then there was another one that actually came out of the hole. One that's a little bit larger, one's a little smaller. One we're going to carve just an S into it for her name, and we'll keep that one here in the house. And then yeah. the other one, we're actually going to carve her full name on it and then put that one out, just on top of the, like, where her grave is. So it'd be nice.
That is nice.
Yeah. So it was tough, but, you know, like I said, it wasn't, I mean, up until, you know, all weekend and, you know, up until basically Monday night, she was fine in the way that, you know, an old dog can be fine. Slow and ambling. She wasn't in pain, you know, she was just kind of normal. And then, it wasn't, you know, from about 5:30 to 10. So it was only a couple hours that she was, in a sense of distress before she passed. So
yeah,
it was tough.
Yeah. No, she's a great dog. I mean, people don't know, we lived together, or some do, but we lived together for, how long was it? 2 years? After
In 2011 to 13.
This was after you had moved away and moved back, and we lived together for a couple of years, but I got to live with Sadie. Yeah. And of course, when you live with a dog, it kind of becomes a little part of yours for a bit.
Right.
And
yeah.
it's just, yeah, she's such a sweet dog. And yeah, she'll be missed. I'm glad we got to all kind of be around her. And I'm glad because the week before we all got to, I mean, we're shooting outside, which we never really do. Almost everything's in your shop, so
right. Yeah,
I mean, Sadie always wants to be outside, like any most dogs, so she got to be outside most of the time watching us just sitting, enjoying it. I got a whole bunch of shots of her, and it was just really nice to be around her, and you could see just her in the back, you know, just loving it like dogs do. They're sitting there and taking it all in. And
yeah it was nice because we had, you know, different people come over, like Sean came over and Brian and Liz came over, and our dad was there helping the whole time. And then, like, the Greens, our friend Brian and Liz, their kids have been over. So, you know, everyone got to be around pretty often while that was happening. And so a lot of people got to be and see, you know, be with her and see her right at the end, you know, last week or 2 weeks ago. So it was nice, you know. It's nice that we were able to do that. And it's nice that she was around for that video and out so much in it, which is sweet. So, like, on Tuesday, my wife and I talked, and I was like, yeah, she was around in so much of the Smithy video, which will, you know, that'll be the last one she'll be in. And we were kind of talking, like, oh, it might be kind of nice to do, like, in honor of her, in memory of Sadie, you know, for that video. And then I went to, like, look at my phone to, like, text you or something about it. And you had suggested it to me, like, as I pulled the phone out, it was like, hey, what if I do, you know, she was in a lot of this, you know, and you asked if I was okay with that, you know, do, like,
right.
in honor of her, you know, in memory of Sadie. So yeah, that'll be cool. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of nice, I posted that to Instagram just briefly, just telling people that, you know, she passed and, you know, that she's a great dog and she'll be missed. And I got a ton of really nice comments on that post. You know, a lot of really thoughtful comments, and a lot of people just saying, like, you know, condolences, but, you know, tons and tons and tons of people replied. So for all of those of you who replied and those of you who liked, and if you didn't, you know, if you know Sadie, we appreciate the well wishes. So that was nice. Nice outpouring of love for us.
Yeah, I feel like there's a couple. Well, there's a bunch of things, but I feel like there's two big things that when you say you've gone through it, people immediately empathize and they know how tough it is. One good one is a dog passing, and another one is when you need a tooth pulled or your tooth hurts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
When you tell someone, you're like, oh, I can't even touch it, and my tooth, and they're like, oh, I know, you know, everyone feels that.
Right, exactly. They know they can commiserate because it's like, if you've had it, you know. You're like, oh, that's so bad.
If you've had that, I have to go to the dentist emergency because I can't bear another second. Like, so I feel like those are two huge things that right away someone would go, oh, I'm so like, oh, I know. Like, I feel for
you.
Yeah,
exactly. That's a good one, yeah. Yeah, I don't know if I've had a real bad toothache before, but I have had pretty bad earaches. And it's the same thing. It's like in your head, oh, in your face, so... you know, in your jaw. And right. you just can't do anything else. You can't think of anything else because your face hurts.
Right.
And it's like, oh, you know, it's so bad. Ugh.
But yeah, I feel like you have so many people reaching out and it's so sweet. But it, again, that and the quote thing, it just goes to how great dogs are.
Yeah.
Why right. we all love them. Cause we all get that same feeling. Cause it does. Yeah. It just feels empty once they're gone.
Right. Yeah. And like there are still things around cause like we're recording on Thursday and that was on Tuesday, you know? So we haven't cleaned up all her stuff yet. I did take down our lead, her lead from outside and put kind of some of the stuff away, but there's still like her dog bowls are there and her bed is still kind of in the same place. Cause we're going to kind of give some stuff away. We have our friends all have dogs and stuff. So we're not just going to get rid of it all. We have a lot of it's good stuff that can still be used. So we'll pass it on. And,
right.
But yeah, it is weird. You know, I had this like, especially like this morning when I got up, we'd always keep our bedroom door closed and Sadie would always lay outside the door. She has the bed in the living room, which she'd stay in. But then usually in the morning she would find her way over to our bedroom door. And if we knew it was like, we had slept in too late when she's just like clip clopping around outside our door, she'd like get up and move and we'd hear her like walking on the wood floors and stuff. So I got up this morning and I kind of opened the door expecting to see her there. And like, for that split second, you know, I was like, you know,
yeah, it's all those reflexes that you,
right.
For so long, it's just a part of you. Yeah. It's,
right. Yeah. It's tough.
Yeah. No, she was a great dog, but man, that's all you can ask for is such a nice long life and a dog that's loved. And you guys did so many hikes with her and overnight things. And man, like you guys gave her such a good fun life for a dog.
Yeah. And that was, I appreciate that. When we got her, it was in 2008, the summer of 2008. And, we were kind of thinking about getting a dog and, my in-laws knew of a friend of a friend or someone, a friend of theirs knew who had her, and they were both doctors or both in the medical profession, and they had just had a child too. So they like had a newborn, they were both really busy working all the time, and they just didn't have enough time to, you know, take care of her and give her the love that she needed, you know, that she deserved. So we got her for free because it was like, they were kind of, I guess, through the grapevine, found out they were trying, you know, our in-laws knew that we were looking for a dog and that there was one available. So we got her that way. So, you know, right off the bat, it was already like, well, we are able to take care of her and we didn't have our daughter yet. So we knew we'd be able to like go out with her and walk her and, you know, do stuff with her. So straight off the bat, it was like, okay, yeah, we have the time to devote to a dog. And like you said, yeah, we did. We took her on tons of hikes. You know, she was a great backpacking dog.
Right.
Unfortunately, she was never, up until maybe like the last year and a half, she was never really great off leash because she just loved to run. So if we like let her out, she wouldn't stay with us, you know, because we didn't have her from when she was a puppy. So she had already had that kind of flight mentality because they had her like in a crate and they had her in a fenced in backyard and she would jump and she would go running and stuff. So we were happy to deal with that. You know, we had leads set up and we would hook her up. But when we first got her, I was up in, we were in New Hampshire and I was in grad school and, I would take her as I went to grad school to get my master's in painting, my MFA, master's of fine art. And I did a lot of landscape painting. That's kind of my main focus of painting. So I would take her with me. We'd go walk from where we were staying, which was an old farmhouse that was converted into a bunch of bedrooms. So it was kind of like this 6 or 7 apartments in this little farmhouse, which was at the end of a tree line driveway in the middle of cornfields, you know, behind us, another like 200 yards or so behind us was the forest. And it went actually for quite a ways. It was a couple hundred acres. And that actually butted up against the property of University of New Hampshire, where I was in grad school, and the forest that they have on their property. So I could actually about 45 minutes or so, I could walk from my house through the woods to where my studio was if I wanted to.
Yeah.
But I would paint a lot in the woods. And so I'd take her out with me, and she was very much like stick driven her pretty much her whole life. She loved sticks. She loved to like fetch. So I would take her out with me, and I just have a stick with me, and I didn't have to have her on the leash because I was going out in the woods, and it was really fun. So I'd like take her out. She'd come out with me, and then I'd set up my easel, you know, in the woods, and I'd start painting, and she'd like hang around for a bit, and then she'd run off for like 2 or 3 minutes, and then she'd come back, and then she'd run off and she'd come back. So like, she really liked the freedom and being in a place like that, where by that point we were, you know, 1,000 yards from whatever road in any direction. And it was just farms around us. It didn't matter. She'd just stay with me in the woods. So it was fun. And she was always great on hikes and stuff. We would go hiking and we had a little dog backpack for her, and she'd wear it and she'd run around and, you know, do like most dogs do, like run forward and run back, run forward and run back.
Yeah, I went on one of those hikes with you guys. I think it's just Harper's Ferry. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, there was one time when we were living in Baltimore City. We were all together. And she would get out a few times.
Yep.
I don't know, every couple of months she'd get out, right?
Yeah, the door would be left open, or she'd sneak by you or something. Somehow she would get out. Yeah, the gate would, we would like latch it, but it wouldn't latch, and she was not the tunist. She'd be like, "Oh, let's go explore."
So then I'd be driving around the city in my truck, and but usually by the time you found her, she was ready, you know.
Right.
Yeah, she was like ready to get back in. So I would just open the door and she'd leap in, like, "Hey,
hey."
And then I think this was either a time when I got her, or we were going somewhere, and I had her in the truck, but I had the window down like halfway because, you know, she likes sticking her head out the window. And she saw another dog and jumped out, and she, you know, wasn't going to attack it. She just wanted to play, but we were at it was in the city. We're out on a road, like with traffic and stuff. So I reached over and grabbed her tail, and that's all I had.
Nice.
It was her hanging out of the truck, and all that I had was her tail. And I pulled her back in by her tail.
That's awesome. That's funny.
You know, she like yelps, but you know, I'm like, well, I'm not letting you jump out in traffic, so I'm going to grab your tail or whatever I can reach.
Better than getting hit by a car.
Right, I'm going to pull you back in.
Yeah, right. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah, we've had, it's funny because all the different places that we lived and the different people who have been around us have their stories of like her getting out. Because like you said, it would be like, once every couple months, somehow she'd find her way out and she'd go to run around for a while. And most of the places that we lived, it didn't really matter until we like lived in the city. That was a little bit, you know, a little scarier. Fortunately, where we lived in the city was kind of on like in a neighborhood area. So it wasn't super busy streets right outside our house, but it was like,
we were a block away from a busy road.
Right. Yeah. So like the potential, if she went that way was that she could.
And you know how it is in a city or anything like that. People aren't going to try to get your dog.
Right.
You're just going to go up and they're going to be like, yeah, I saw your dog go that way. Yeah, you didn't try to, now I'm not touching the dog, but yeah, I saw a dog go that way. Like, all right, thanks.
Right. Yeah, exactly. But yeah, that's funny. Yeah. I mean, I know like my in-laws have, because we lived with them for a year, so they have stories of like Chase and Sadie, my wife's uncle, my parents, you know, everybody has their stories of like her getting out and then you got to go find her. And
yeah. I mean, and that is one thing that you just can't, if a dog has that in them, that's right. Just how it's going to be. I mean, other than that, she was such a such a sweet dog and had discipline. Right. And if she was begging or she was in the kitchen, all you got to say is, you know, out of the kitchen, and she would, you know, get out. She would just walk, you know, she was.
Yeah, she knew. Yeah, exactly.
But when a dog has that in them. Yeah. That they want to explore, there's nothing you can do about that. It's kind of like our dog, or it was Caitlin's dog until we got married. Gomer, who recently passed, but it might have been one of the first times where I just took Gomer.
Right.
Caitlin and I are dating, and she had to go somewhere. I was like, I'll take the dog. I forget the situation. I take her up, and we're building Dad's one of his sheds. I don't know which one.
One of the sheds.
And we had Gomer out, and he wasn't a bolter. He was a sneaky, lull you into, he's not going anywhere, and then he's gone. Because he would just walk away. You know, he would he would be around for like an hour.
Right.
Just to get you nice and comfy. Like, he wouldn't go anywhere. He would just sniff around and sit and lay and walk around, and then he'd be gone. And this time, he was gone. And I was like, oh no. Like, I told her it'd be fine. Like, I had, you know, I got your dog, whatever. It's my girlfriend's dog, and it's gone now. Right. I'm going to find it on the road dead or something. You know, that's what you think immediately.
Mm-hmm.
And so we start driving. We're driving, and then I don't know if it was Dad's suggestion or something, but we drove down to, like, the neighbors where there were goats. And he had gone and visited the goats.
Nice.
You know, like three or four houses over, you know, like a half mile or a mile away, you know. And he was just at the fence sniffing, you know.
That's funny.
And then, you know, he saw us coming. He was like, uh-oh. Oh,
yeah, no. Right. Okay.
I've done it.
Yeah,
now.
That was that was the thing. Sadie would always, like, she, within the first, you know, 10 or 15 minutes of being out, if you tried to chase after her, then it was like a game, you know. Then she was gone.
Right.
And she was always, like, super, super fast when she was younger. And then as she got older, she got less and less fast. So if I saw her get out and I could run after her, like, I could outrun her. And she would only go so far before she'd realize it, you know. Right. And I'm also like, Saturday, stop running, you know. And she was like, yeah. And then eventually she's like, oh, crap, I can't outrun her. So she would just, like, stop. And then, like, but when she was younger, she was just like, I'm just gone, you know.
Yeah,
like,
see,
you
right.
Catch me, I'm just going to run, yeah. You know.
Like, I'm just going to go until you can't see me.
Right, yeah.
Then we're done. She'll look back and, okay, they're gone. I've lost them.
I tracked her one time in the winter. She had gotten out from where we are now here at our place. And we're, you know, we're maybe 300 or 400 yards from the main road. And it's just all neighborhoods and woods behind us. So when she got out here, she never in all the years that we lived here that she got out, which might have been a dozen times or so or more, you know, in the 5 or 6 years that we've lived here, she never went all the way to the road. There were a few times when we kind of found her down closer to the golf course, but we never found her. We never, like, there was no sign of her ever going that way.
Yeah.
So when we'd get out here, if we didn't kind of find her right away, we kind of look around for 10 minutes, you call for a while, and then you just stop. You know, like, she'd come back. That was the other thing. She'd always come back. Usually it'd be like in 20 minutes or half an hour, she'd kind of come back and she'd be all gross because she would have gone into the pond or found something to roll in, and she'd be all super tired because she'd been running the whole time and panting heavily. And you're like, okay, she'd come back for water. But this one time, a couple years ago, she got out and it was winter and it was early evening. And I tracked her. I was like, I'm going to track her. So I saw her footprints and started following her. And she always, one of her back legs, she always kind of dragged her toes a little bit, you know, or at least, you know, especially in winter, like she's stepping. And it wasn't a ton of snow, but there was snow. It may have been 3 or 4 inches. So I could see, especially when there'd be a bunch of different, you know, tracks and things, because we've got foxes and raccoons and other dogs in this, you know, around. So I'd see other dog tracks and they'd all track, and I'd look for her one paw print that would have like a print and then a drag, you know, like a couple toes would like drag. So I kind of tracked her up into the woods, like back, you know, deep in the woods, all the way around, kind of kept going and going. And then all the way up into the neighborhood, I tracked her all the way up there. And then I go to start coming back and I see her and she's like 100 yards ahead of me. And she's like up in the, you know, up in the neighborhood. So I was like, yes, I actually tracked her all the way up here. It was awesome. And then I like went and called out to her. And by that point, it has probably been like 25 minutes or so. So she kind of half came and I ran at her and then she like went to run and then she stopped. And then I think I brought like a rope along just in case I found her. So I just walked back with her. But I was like, tracked you through the snow. Like a champ. There was another time when she got out in the snow, and this was like deep snow. This same, still here at the same location. She had, it was like maybe a foot and a half of snow, maybe even 2 feet at some places. And she, at that point, she was still fast enough to outrun me, but she couldn't outrun me in 2 feet of snow. She was like, you know, and I'm like, obviously tall. So I'm like, like running after her, and she's like trying to go. And I was like, no, you don't. I like outran her, caught up with her. You know, when you get in within like 40 or 50 feet, she like realizes it, you know. She's like, oh, I can't go anywhere. So she's got stopped and turned around and waited and just walked behind me in my footprints. Oh, yeah. I can't go anywhere. It snow's too deep.
Yeah, it's what a crazy thing. I was talking to my wife and she's like, after Gomer passed, she's like, man, why do we like, because we've been thinking about getting another one, you know, like you do.
Yeah. Yep.
After a little while, you start to not forget, but the routine of not having the dog starts to kick in.
Yeah, right.
So it doesn't feel as much as like an empty thing because we have a new routine now.
Yeah, right.
So we're starting to think about it. She's like, why it's that thing, we all get dogs and we know they're going to die. Like, right. we're going to have to go through this again if we get a dog we really love, you know, or any dog, you know.
Right, yeah.
But it's, you know, you got to do it. If you only got so much time, so that's the thing. Like, we want to wait, but we want to have dogs around, and we want our daughter to grow up with a dog, so.
Yeah. Right, yeah, exactly. And that's, it's just one of those things that you know you're going to have to deal with. I mean, I think that's the same as making any relationship, you know, getting
that's
to
true.
Become, you know, people, you know, you humans, I think, want to love, right? You want to like express love. Mm-hmm. We try to make people laugh all the time, which I've thought of over the years. Like, that's such a weird thing that humans do. Like, we say jokes to make other people laugh. Right. Like, that's not, it's like, that's purely a human trait, you know, like we do things to tickle people. We try to, you know, we want to give love and we want to get love. And so, you know, dogs have such unconditional love. And that amount of love is the reason why humans are so in touch with dogs and have been for so long, that they have that like unconditional love that they give you, you know?
Yeah.
And that's worth it. Yeah. You know, it is tough to lose them, but it's worth it, you know, and it's worth it to be able to give them a good life as well. Cause so many dogs are just in, you know, in shelters and will be euthanized if they're not taken or adopted or whatnot. So.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I was also, I think we were watching one of those vet shows, and when people put down horses, oh my gosh.
Oh yeah.
That's rough. Cause you almost have the feeling that you want dogs to last a really long time, but then you go, okay, if they did stay alive as long as horses, it's just maybe not harder, but it's horses. You've maybe had a horse for 30 years.
Yeah. Right.
And then you got to put your horse down. Yeah. Like, oh, it's brutal. Like,
right.
You can see. Yeah. And that's, I mean, dog's man's best friend, but like a horse is the other one because it also gives you transportation.
Yeah.
It's with you. It's, you know, they're loving, they're funny, and they're, you know, it's, right. Oh man, it's just, it's tough, but you know, you got to go through it. It's definitely worth it.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. It's another one of those companion animals that's been around for a long time with humans.
Right.
And maybe the lifespan of a dog is like, maybe it's the right amount of time.
Right.
That like
just enough that we can handle it.
Yeah, 10 to 15 years, right? Just long enough that you can handle it. And yeah, like a horse, right? Then you got 30 years invested in a horse, and you know, that's half your lifetime. It's like,
right?
Yeah, like it's like losing a family member. I mean, you know, a lot of people actually have a crazy story, and I'll finish like the dog part of this discussion, and then we'll move on. Mm. But I was talking to one of my coworkers today, and she told me the story of her dog. That she had many years ago. She had a, what type of dog is it? A Pekingese? I can't remember. Fluffy, little kind of fluffy dogs. I can't remember what she said it was. Pyrenees? I forget, whatever. But not a Pyrenees. So she said, you know, and I was telling her that it worked out really well for us that Sadie kind of let us know that she was in pain early in the day, early in the morning. So that way then we could take off and we wouldn't have to just have her be there all alone by herself and go through all that without us being home. And then us like coming home to her just passed on her bed or something, you know, like that would have been horrible.
Yeah.
And my coworker is saying how, you know, she believes that like that connection between humans and dogs is definitely more than just a purely like friend, you know, friend and love connection, that there's like some more like spiritual and then also some, you know, psychic connections. And I'm sure there are, you know, like who knows what they're, what different animals can do and have to offer. And there are tons of stories of that type of thing where dogs know that their owners are, you know, in trouble, but they're not near them and they run off and they find them somewhere hurt. You know, there's like a connection there.
Yeah.
She said that she believes that her dog kind of gave her some dreams leading up to its passing.
Ooh.
Where like several nights or over the span of a certain amount of time, she had multiple dreams where her dog would run and hide under the bed. Like over and over, she kept having this dream and she didn't know why. It was like running and it would be shaking and hide under the bed. Like it was trying to find somewhere safe. And then she said she was visiting a friend's house of hers and they were inside the house and she had her dog with her, and she kind of walked down to the porch, and it was windy, but not too crazy. It was like kind of like a storm was coming, but not bad. So she walked down on the porch. She had her dog. She was holding it, and it started like kind of shaking and freaking out. And she was like, what's the matter? And then it kind of jumped out of her arms, like kind of got loose and ran down the steps. Not like really to run off. It just kind of ran down and stopped.
Mm.
And she said that minute a branch fell from the tree, one branch, and hit her dog and killed it.
Jeez.
Yeah. I was like, that's crazy. Like, and she said the way he was acting was kind of weird. Like, you know, like shaking and weird. Like she said that the dog didn't really do that all that much. And, you know, and then like how it jumped out of her and ran down the steps, like all this, like kind of, and the dreams that built up to this happening. It was very like, you know, mysterious. Like she said, it was kind of crazy, but she definitely believes that maybe the dog was trying to prepare her or something, like with dreams or something, to let her know that either it knew something was coming or what, who knows. But I think that's kind of wild. I was like, man, that is crazy. And, you know, I believe 100% that that's true. Like there was definitely something there between her dog and her before that happened, you know?
Well, yeah, even if you don't believe in some type of spiritual connection, I mean, there's, dogs are so attentive, for one.
Right, yeah.
And their ability, some of them, to read different emotions is heightened.
Oh, yeah.
That's just how they are. That's just the style of animal they are, to be in a pack, and they want to be around others. So they're constantly paying attention to you. And I think that is a big part of when they can feel that something's wrong, or they start to shift the way they act, because maybe that's the way you're acting.
All right.
And yeah, obviously it's not like hocus pocus. I mean, energy is waves, and that stuff goes through people, and, yeah, it's real stuff. And yeah, I mean, I think just dogs are so, they're so attentive.
Yeah, exactly. They're
tuned into you, and all that stuff. I could believe all that stuff can happen too. It's,
yeah. And like, I mean, you know, there's a reason why they have like dogs as service animals, you know, and going into hospitals and bringing, you know, like on different wards and different people who are like terminally ill or people who have cancer, you know, they have like dogs kind of sense that, and they will kind of change and, you know, be what each person needs them to be. It's crazy. Yeah.
Yeah.
Pretty wild. So yeah, I mean, we're thinking the same thing you said about like thinking about getting a new dog. We were actually thinking about getting another dog like a couple months ago.
Yeah. Right.
Because Sadie was getting old, and we kind of wanted her to have like a companion, and also to help us transition between her passing and having a new dog. So we kind of reached out to a couple different, dog, adoption places in this kind of mid Atlantic, USA area. And, we went and visited one dog, and Sadie would have been fine, but the other dog wasn't really like having it. And, you know, they kind of like, I don't know. It just wasn't a great match. Like, it was potentially a good match, but then it wasn't. And, the woman who was there suggested that maybe, you know, Sadie, maybe we shouldn't get another dog while we have Sadie. Maybe we should let her be like just her until the end.
Right.
And I think, you know, and I think she would have been fine. I think it was definitely the other dog that was a little bit weirded out by it, but maybe it was because Sadie is a dominant, like she's always been an alpha.
Right.
Not really aggressive in her old age, but like, she also wasn't going to back down. Like, she was walking around and sniffing and fine. And then she walked by the dog, and the dog kind of snipped out at her. And so she like snipped back at her, you know. It was kind of like, you know, I'm not going to back down. I'm not worried, but you know, so,
I'm a bitch, but I'm not a bitch. All
right. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Don't test me. So yeah, she was, so we were waiting about that, but yeah, so we are thinking, you know, sometime, maybe this summer, which is a nice thing that I'm, as a teacher, I have the summers off. So if we do get another dog, it'd probably be around that time, so we can kind of have some time to be with the dog and we're not working and all, you know. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
we're thinking, you know, we'll see, you know, we all love having a dog, myself, my wife and our daughter, and, you know, but yeah, so new things. And that's kind of the theme, that not the dog thing. That's kind of what's been going on in our life.
Dog is the theme now. We've done
that. It's the whole thing. It's the episode.
Right.
Yeah. Maybe we should keep our theme till next week. We're 45 minutes in.
Oh, we can. Yeah. I mean, we're just going to talk about starting up new things and new projects. And
yeah. Yeah. Well, the reason why I wanted to talk about it, and then we can go into a little bit, but maybe we can push it further, because, you know, the theme of the podcast, which we've kind of thought since the beginning, is kind of the idea of starting your next first project, right? Starting something new, you know, and maybe hopefully that the our podcast can give you some inspiration or help you think about it. You know, we kind of go through some of the older videos we do and talk about them a little bit more in depth, and also, you know, being content creators and all that stuff. You know, we just kind of go into it. So we thought that'd be kind of a cool topic to think about. And, you know, this being episode 40, we're kind of like at a waypoint. We're doing pretty good and still going. And so my mind was on the finishing of the smithy. Like, we had just finished the smithy, you know, it's just a lean to, but I've built things like this in the past, but never for myself, you know, I was never like, I'm building this. This is a structure. It needs to be sound. It needs to be able to hold weight. It needs to, you know, protect this area and also not blow over. All these things that I've never done and have to make all the decisions on how it's done and the plan and all that. So it was an odd thing. And I found myself, you know, this is like a new project. So for the channel, we were going to record it, but it was something I hadn't done before. Most of the things that we record or things that I've done before, you know, I've kind of fleshed them out. I've done them, so I kind of know the process.
Right.
And so when I get an idea for a video for the channel, if it's something I've done before, but it may be a little different or something that I think is interesting, well, then I'll put it on the list of videos that I keep. And then that's pretty much all I need to think about it until we're ready to do it. And then I might draw up a few designs and maybe like look at some inspiration. But when I come up with a new idea, something I haven't done before, well, then it takes a bigger chunk of my brain up, you know, like I'll put it on that list, but then I'll also do a drawing that goes along with that, you know, number on the list. So I have these two things. That's my initial drawing. Right. And then I'll start looking for inspiration, and I'll look on Instagram and I'll look at other people on YouTube and how they've done it. I'll Google it. I'll look at forums, you know, I'll just dive into it and see, and I just gather that inspiration, visual inspiration. And then also like how to do it. And the one thing I found about doing the smithy, building the lean-to, was like, I started seeing other like carports and lean-tos and farm stands. And I just started seeing them all around, you know, I'm like, oh, that's how they did it. Oh, that's how they did it. Oh, they have like a roof that's pitched two ways. Oh, there's four corners there. Oh, you know, it's like when you get a new car and you start seeing it everywhere, you know, it's like, well, I started seeing them everywhere behind people's houses. I'd be driving down the road and I'd notice one like tucked in behind someone's house. Like, oh, I wonder how they made them. Pull over and check it out. That's a nice lean-to.
Hello, sir.
Can I look at your construction?
Well, the good thing about something like that is obviously you want to make it nice, but it's not a structure holding anything other than maybe snow. You know, that's the heaviest thing I'll ever hold.
Right,
and
exactly.
It's not attached to anything. It's kind of, so you can be, I mean, you want to really go into it and plan out as much as you can, but you don't have to be too strict about it. Maybe if it was your 20th one, you'd have exactly what you wanted to do. But since this is one of the first ones you've done just for yourself and not like whatever, helping dad on stuff or
we built porches and
yeah, we're always building stuff.
Yeah. Right.
And, yes, but, having a bunch of people there too, who have done stuff like it.
Yeah.
It's good just to stand around and bounce ideas off of each other.
Right.
Like, wait, you think you want to attach that to that? Yeah. We'll attach this here and that. Oh yeah, I guess. Well, what if we swing this down here? Yeah, I've done that. Yeah, swing that down here. Attach that. Okay, cool. And everyone agrees. Then you go ahead and do it. It's nice to have a bunch of people around who have done like things.
It is, yeah. It's super nice having that point of view. And that was the fun of building the smithy, was that it was during our spring break, and our dad is like kind of semi-retired, and you know, he was able to be there every day, and our friends were able to come over, and you know, that's half the fun. Like my buddy Sean, who I've talked about a lot of time, and he's been on the show from Crafting a Life I Want. He messaged on like, I think, Friday, and was like, sorry, I couldn't come today and help, you know, busy day, whatever. He had his in-laws, or his parents, were actually coming in town for the weekend and sometime this past week. So they were doing tons of stuff to get ready. He actually ended up stopping by at one point during the day. It was funny. He like came by, and the rest of us all are in like messy clothes and muck boots, and we're all like dusty and he like shows up and he's all clean and trim, you know. I was like, oh, supervisor's here, you know, like checking in on the project. But he just wanted to stop by to see how things are going, because there's that like that group builder mentality. It's like what a barn, you know, what a, like a barn raising is, you know, it's right. like everyone comes together and everyone puts their input in. And there were definitely design things that I had in mind for the smithy that got changed along the way because people were like suggested other things, or my dad's experience was like, oh, it should go this way, you know, as opposed to this way, because that's how it's done. And, you know, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. That's how yeah. it's done. Right. And yeah. Like I wouldn't, I may not have done it that way. And I was like, what was the one thing I did? The tar paper, which we put on the roof. We did it when he wasn't here, and we put it up and we did it like yeah. vertically or something from the top of the pitch to the bottom instead of across, you know, or something.
Right.
Like, yeah, it would have gone the other way. You know?
Right. Instead of laying it as you would lay any shingles,
right.
you know, going downhill, everything goes downhill. You don't want water to get under anything.
Right. Yeah.
We had done it. Yeah. We had done it the opposite way.
Right. Yeah. So going across, right. And I did think about the way it overlapped because the pitch of the roof is it's closer on the house and it pitches out away from the house down, you know, maybe a foot or so over 10 feet. And then it also pitches about, I think 2 or 3 inches, from, if you're looking at the front of it from left to right. So it does have a little bit of pitch that way. Everything kind of rolls in one direction. So it doesn't just come straight off the front, but it also pitches to the side a little bit. So I did kind of go in that same direction. I overlapped it so that way the water would go that way as well as down. But yeah, it was funny.
Yeah.
He showed up and he was like, oh, yeah. And he was like, usually tar paper's the other way. And I was like, oh, yeah, that makes sense.
Right.
Should have done that. Oh, well. We'll get that in the comments. Hey, idiot, why'd you put the tar paper the wrong way? This is horrible. No one does it that way.
We just built it.
Yeah, right. But yeah, it's kind of like you were kind of alluding to. It's kind of like a baby step in building something, a structure, you know, like building a yeah. lean-to that's not attached to the house. It doesn't need to bear any weight. No one's going to be on top of it except for maybe snow load, you know, the wind.
Yeah.
It's not all closed in, like, you know, all the things. It made it, you know, the easiest version of some type of construction that I could do that I've never done before. But the nice thing is that it, like, it does exactly what it needs to do, which is it just covers the smithy outside.
Yeah, it really makes it to a nice outside of the shop area. It makes it an area now instead of just like a way we would pass through to get to something. Obviously we're putting tools outside, so it's now it is an area, but it feels like you could have people out there now.
Yeah,
you know, you could bring a few people together and everyone could be out in that back area on that side of the house. It's really nice.
Yeah, it's gonna be cool. I'm excited. So yeah, that was fun to kind of do a new thing. And, you know, like I said, it had been a few months that I had thought about making it, and I kept getting more and more excited. And, you know, you guys, if you listen to the podcast, you heard over the last, you know, month or two or so that I've been like planning this, and you'll see in the video that it was, I guess it was sometime in December maybe, or January. I don't know. Maybe it was January or February that we got the roofing material from your in-laws. So
right. Yeah, we talked a little bit about
months, you know?
Yeah, we talked about that, where it's going from snow to the end where we're up on the roof of it, you know.
Yeah, right.
Dustin's getting burnt. It does get red. I'm like, hey man, you should put on some suntan lotion.
Yeah, got a red neck. Yeah.
But the video's going good. It'll be this podcast is out tomorrow, and then the video should be out by Sunday. So look out for that this weekend or soon thereafter.
Right. Yeah.
I've been enjoying anytime there's something different, I enjoy editing it more.
Right. Yeah.
Obviously, because it's just totally different. The one thing I did find that we need to do is I'm going to maybe get a second mic, or we'll get that Rode 2 set.
Right.
Where we can have two mics, because only having you mic'd up is somewhat problematic when we have four guys working.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Because there were times when I was editing and I'd be like, oh, here's Brian and my dad working on something, and their sound of you like down in the shop, like whistling.
Right. Yeah.
or there's been a few where there's like someone else is cutting something.
Right.
You know, with a chop saw or whatever. And there's no sound. There's just like you walking around as sound.
Right.
So yeah, I've had to do a lot of, it's taken a lot longer in that fact where I'm adding other sound from other places.
Oh, that's funny.
Nice. Like times when you're cutting stuff, I just, you know, grab that and use that. You know.
Yeah, right. I wonder if, like, you know, even with the double mics, you know, if we're not, if it's in a situation like that where we might not want to mic up just one person, one other person, it's like a situation where you can have it ready.
Right. Yeah.
And I then would, you're I, like, you just hold it out or put it next to him, or
I would either
standing there next to him. Right.
You know, I would either clip it on me or clip it on the camera and just have it right on the camera. So whatever I'm pointing at, I'll be close to.
Yeah. Right.
And we did that for a while. In the middle of the shoot, I took, remember, or whatever, you gave me the mic and I just sat it on the rooftop of the entrance to the shop and got all those noises. But so that's something we got to, it's probably time we pick up that.
Yeah. I did realize when I took the pictures of the shop when I put the lights on, and there's a shot from kind of at an angle up the hill where you can kind of see up on top. And I realized that there's the two pieces of 2x4 are still sitting up there. They're still there. The ones that we were using to like to hold down stuff, you know, so the wind wouldn't blow it away.
Wait, where? We were, like, it's up on the shop roof?
It's up on top of the roof, yeah. Up on top of the on top of the smithy roof.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, I was like, oh, that's funny. I didn't notice it when I first posted those pictures, but then I like looked closer or something, and I was like, oh, that's funny, that roof. That's, or maybe I noticed it. Maybe I was outside and I noticed it, and I looked back at the pictures, and it's, there's the 2x4 sitting up on the roof of the smithy.
Yeah, but it's a fun, I'm really enjoying it. I think it's a good video, and
yeah.
I mean, I don't know if it'll get any views. It's something totally different.
Right.
People aren't going to use it necessarily as a how-to because, you know, you're not explaining it as much. You're just kind of going along.
Right.
This and you stop, you stop doing, like normal and discuss what you're doing, but it's a lot of just working on stuff. But it's nice. It's there. It's, you know, it is what YouTube does best. A little bit of knowledge, a little bit of escapism. Like, hey, I'm just hanging out with these people.
Yeah, right, exactly.
And, like, you know, maybe it's 2 o'clock in the morning and it's cold outside or something, and you're watching this YouTube of people in summer outside building something.
Right, yeah.
It's nice. I mean, I enjoy watching that stuff, so I think it'll be a nice little video. And it'll be long, or long-ish, you know, like they all are, so 30, 40 minutes.
Right. And I think, you know, obviously our the umbrella that we spread to try to reach people, you know, we want our videos to reach as many people as possible, but we also have a lot of people now that are with under the umbrella of the Art of Craftsmanship, right? They're subscribed, they're listening to the podcast, they follow along, and or they've seen videos and they know to come back later to check again. So some videos, you know, as I think as that umbrella expands and as our community gets larger, then not all the videos have to potentially reach so many more people. Some of them can be designed to kind of bring the people along who've already been here along the journey more.
Right.
And that's like restoring the vice and building the smithy. You know, those are people who have been along. They know what the shop is like. They know the tools I've had over the years. They've seen the shop grow, and now they're seeing like an expansion, you know, and they see that as like, okay, now there's going to be some stuff shot outside, you know? So,
yeah, and I think that's we all love watching those videos.
Right.
I love it. And it's like a radio show or podcast too. Like, hey, a month ago he was talking about getting this done, and I want to see what happened.
Right.
Know
exactly.
What happened.
Yeah.
Like, I love watching that stuff on every channel and all the podcasts. So I think it's we're going to show it all, and it's pretty good. You're going to see everybody, Brian, Sean, me. I chopped some stuff up, even though Dust was making fun of me. There's a clip. He was like, hey, they were all looking for a tool, and it was right next to me. But obviously I have the camera and I'm shooting them looking for a tool. I'm not looking for the tool. And Dustin goes, yeah, it's over there next to the guy not working.
Nice.
I was like, damn, bro. It's cool.
That's great. You're like, what do you think I'm doing here?
I know. I'm not just standing here for fun. I'm shooting a video. You're like, yeah, whatever.
That's great. Yeah, we did talk about that, how, like, you know, shooting the whole time, you got exhausted too from being outside and being shooting for many hours and days in a row. You know, like the whole time you're concentrating.
Yeah, you're looking. It's always looking for a shot. Looking. What's going on? What's going on? Can I get that? Did I get it? Was that good? Good. Okay, move.
Yeah, that concentration. I mean, I do that. Like, when I, you know, I'll sweat when I concentrate hard. Like, I'll be like doing something or doing a drawing or writing, you know, I'll do something and I'm sweating. And Nicole's like, yeah, man, why are you sweating? I'm like, I don't know, I'm stressing. Like my body's like, I'm concentrating right now. I'm not doing anything hard, but I'm working hard thinking.
This is what we do.
Yeah, right. I'm an O'Hara. That's what happens.
We sweat.
All right. You have a recommendation for this week?
Yeah, I'm going to do a thing.
Okay.
If you are thinking about starting videos and you're anywhere near a shop or you're shooting in a shop, I would get a simple thing, just an air duster, or one of the ones I use is it's called a rocket air. It looks like a little rocket. Buy one of those, because you do not, I mean, your lens is constantly going to get dirty. And you don't have the time to wipe it off every time. Because if you're going to wipe your lens off properly, right, you get like a lens wipe out and you wipe that, but sometimes that leaves debris, so you need like a soft cloth and you need to take your, you don't want to do that every time there's dust or dirt.
Yeah.
Because it's constantly landing. Yeah. So the quickest and best way I've found is just you do a little that.
Oh,
I kind of am holding it. You do a little bit of that on the lens, and it gets rid of it. And I'm actually constantly doing that.
Yeah.
Constantly doing that and all over the camera. Just all over, under. Good, because it's all stuff. You don't want that stuff getting in.
Right. Yeah, but you'll lean over and you'll do it to my mic. You'd be like, blow it off.
Right.
Like, oh, yeah. Because, I mean, you know, it's the same thing. Like, you don't want to rub it. So, and then, you know, you would blow it or any normal time. But then if it's your lens, you don't want to put, like, the moisture on it. So you know,
right. It's going to be your spit on the lens. So you just hit it with the – and it's a $10 or $15 thing. And that's something is always in my pocket.
Yeah, right.
That's, like, the one thing.
Next time you're there, we got to remember to do a little – rubber cement on it, because the one piece kind of came off and we tried super glue and I was like, this is gonna be great, this is like professional super glue, it's good to go. And then it broke.
But I guess super glue
is supposed to be, you know, this needs to be able to move. Yeah.
And I also said, I think last time you used the same glue and it didn't work. You're like, no, this is not going anywhere, this this is fine, this will stick. And this then I came back the next day and it was just half off. I was like,
hey, look.
But I might do that, but I might just buy another one.
Yeah. Well, yeah. So you can buy another one, then we'll.
I mean, they're $10 or $15, but if you want to shoot in a shop, it's the best way to clean your lens. That's my recommendation.
Nice. I like it. My recommendation is a blacksmith. Lives up in Harrisburg, PA. Actually, pretty close to us, so we should go up and visit him sometimes. His name is Dave Franz, FRANTZ, France, Dave France. And his Instagram handle is Dave_France. And he does some really awesome bottle openers. He does axes and hammers and, you know, some tool restoration and all sorts of fun stuff. But he posts pretty often on Instagram some really cool work. And somebody that I kind of started following a little bit more recently, and I really enjoy his work. He does these really awesome like octopus arms, bottle openers. So like an octopus tentacle with the bottle opener on it. And it's got all the little suction cup things on the arm. It's crazy looking. They look super realistic. You know, it's like almost like you're eating octopus from a restaurant. So yeah, cool stuff. He does all sorts of good stuff. But yeah, check him out on Instagram, Dave_France, FRANTZ, Franz.
Franz. Franz.
Franz.
The finest of wines.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be cool if you had a some type of device. Let's say you could make it. You could blacksmith it up that you could sit on top of. So, like, I was thinking the octopus thing.
Yeah.
Like, if you had, instead of eight, you had six for a six pack, and you hit one piece that levers six things into action. And can pop the tops of all the bottles.
Whoa, my mind's blown over here.
Wouldn't that be cool? Like,
that would be awesome.
So you sit this metal thing down, right? And it's got arms in each thing, right? And then you would just need like a center bar or something. It would have to either sit up, because in a six pack you got the two middle ones. Right. But no, it could run. The bar could run through the middle and out to the side.
Mm-hmm.
And all you do is either hit down on that piece or, you know, hit it quick with something.
Right.
And you could pop six at one time.
I like that. That it's funny. I just watched the tested episode, Adam Savage and Lara Kampf, when they did the over-engineered bottle opener.
Ooh.
Like, I just watched it yesterday. Corinne and I watched it together. And it takes a lot to get that, to have something that can go up underneath that lip, but just really small, and pop it off without breaking the lip.
Yeah. Well,
so I like the idea of having one that does all six. Can you imagine, like, how fucking cool that would be if you, like, walked out to a group and you, like, put this thing down, you hit a button, pow, and it pops them all, and everyone grabs their beer.
Yeah.
Like a champion, instant champion.
It's like an instant party trick. Like, you brought this really cool thing.
Right.
And it attaches to all of them. Yeah, I think it could be just six separate bottle openers attached to a middle bar.
Right.
That goes through the middle, that ratchets up and down, that when you hit it, something off to the side, or maybe you hit directly in the middle.
Right.
And it just pops them all at once. And then you're cool, and then you and your five friends are having a good time right away.
I like that. Well, it does, yeah. That'll be one of those things. See, there you go. Something, trying to make something I've never done before. So now we have the idea now. And we have to do, like, a little drawing and then a more detailed drawing and a more detailed drawing and look at some more stuff and start. Yeah. Like, I like that. I like the idea of making something that's kind of superfluous. Like, it's kind of extra. It doesn't need to exist.
Yeah. But
if it does, it's fun. Like, because with that, you'd have to, like, you'd have to set it up. You know, you'd have to take all the bottles out. You'd have to put them in. They'd all have to be aligned really nicely. Make sure everything's working well. Because then you want to come out, when you do it, you want it to work perfectly.
Right.
Or you don't want to, like, hit it and, like, two of them pop and one of them break. Like, one sizzles and the other three smash, you know, like, they're like, bump, bump, bump.
Someone's got a glass, like, in their neck. Well, what did you do?
Hero to zero instantly, you know, you're like, oh. So you'd have to set it up and then you walk out and you do it. Like, that's that party trick. That's really cool, but it's got to work perfectly, you know.
So even if, like, even if you could do it where maybe you can't just push down it, because you need a quick movement, right?
Right, yeah.
So maybe it is that middle bar running through, and then, like, a round surface at the end of it that you can hit. Like, if you bring a hammer or something with you,
right,
and you just go bang, and everything like flies off, and you've
they
got
all
these
pop up.
Yeah,
I like it. I like it's funny because. You know, talk this being spawned from the Dave Franz, like, bottle openers made out of tentacles, you know, like, I just imagine it being all made out of metal and being like an octopus, like the entire thing is an octopus, and you're, like, you're holding the top of its head or something, and its arms are all wrapped around the bottles and wrapped around this, like, steel cage that's holding everything. And then they all, you like push one of the tentacles down and it pops everything or something. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. It sounds awesome.
All right.
There are some cool, like, beer related videos out there, you know, different cool holders and stuff, and people have done some cool stuff. So
yeah, that'd be fun. Something we even if you didn't forge the bottle openers, even though that'd be more, that would probably be more fun, better for the video, but
even if it was like, yeah, just to, like, you know, just engineering it all with, you know,
well, I think the cool thing about that is you could forge these bottle openers with, because you're going to need a little wiggle room anyway.
Right.
So whatever attaches to that center bar needs kind of, like, if you made a normal bottle opener and then wrapped it around towards the end to wrap around a bar.
Right.
That wiggle room is perfect, just enough for you to adjust it, you know, click it on to whatever you're doing.
Right. I guess if you had, like, two bars running down both sides and then you had the bottle openers. Say it's like a little, like, seahorse, right? So at the head, you kind of, at the end of the tail, wraps around the bars. So then you have six little seahorse bottle opener things that you can flip forward and you kind of get them in position. And then you, like, lift up on the ends, right? And it pops. It just, like, does the normal action of, like, popping the bottle opener. You know, it doesn't have to be super aggressive, but it can be like it does them all at the same time or something. Yeah.
And I wasn't even thinking of making it, like, decorative, but. Yeah. That actually is kind of cool because you bring it out and people don't know what it is.
Right.
Like, what's this weird, like, metal-looking seahorse octopus creature? And then you, like, attach it to all the bottles and hit it. Yeah. All right. We're on to something.
I like it. We're on to something. Sweet. All right. If that happens anywhere on YouTube or on the internet, you know you heard it here first.
That's ours. That's ours. And we'll still make one because, oh, they figured out how to do it. Let's do a video of it.
That would be, how funny would that be? Yeah, you, like, come up with a completely new idea. Actually, on the Making It podcast, they're talking about that I think even last week, a couple weeks ago, you know, coming up with an idea that's like super cool. Someone would be like, I got this great idea, you know, I want to make this thing. And then you like Google it and there's like a dozen of the same exact thing that already exists. You're like, not too late. You know, it's your idea, but you know, didn't it's already happened. So now you're done. All right. Well, that's it, folks. It's a tough week and I didn't do a ton of stuff, but it was nice. I am back to teaching hybrid this week, which is kind of weird too. So trying to figure that out. That was kind of on my mind, and I have my midterm for my class I'm on. We're going camping this weekend. So I've had a bunch of, I feel like I've done a ton of stuff, just not like made anything. And it feels weird to have not made anything, but, what are you going to do? Yeah. All right. Yeah, that's it. So, you know, again, guys, you can always like go follow us on Instagram because a lot of stuff we talk about here, you can see pictures of, you know, I try to post that as well as the recommendations and links and stuff. We'll post that on Instagram as well as in the show notes below. If you want a way to support the channel, you know, like we talked about last week too, if there's anybody out there who wants to help us out, in any way, you can always send us a message. You can DM us. And also if you want a way to support us, financially, you can go and check us out on Patreon and support us there. And we really appreciate all those patrons.
Yeah, and with that, I do think we should need to start like a Discord or something.
Right. No, I like that
idea too. A lot more people are doing it now, and I'm just like, oh, we should have been doing that. And a Discord, if you don't know, Discord, it started out as a kind of a meeting place for like gamers on PC where you could like join a group, invite anyone you wanted, and have like a screen where you could write all your own stuff and post like anything, videos. Right. You could also have a open audio line to each other.
Okay.
Where everyone can talk at once, and you can have a Discord where everyone can chat as many people as you want.
Right.
So it's just a meeting ground where you can do anything. You can share pictures, videos, and you can chat either text or talk. More people are using it for other things now, and I think it's we should do it. Why not? And, you know, I think we'll let everyone enter who wants to and join in the conversations. And maybe Patreon people, they can have their own, there's like levels and stuff of people who can post special things and their stuff will pop up. And
right. Yeah.
But either way,
or something.
Yeah. But I think that'd be nice just to, cause we just, I feel like we don't chat to enough people.
Yeah.
We need to interact more than just comments on YouTube or a few emails and DMs here and there.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. I think that'd be good. And especially, like you said, for the patrons on Patreon, you know, we've always said that we try to be really honest in the beginning when we started Patreon. We're like, we don't have enough time to do a ton of extra stuff for Patreon, which is why we didn't start it right away. We wanted people to know that by supporting us through Patreon, you're supporting the channel, right? You're supporting more stuff. We see you. We know you're there. We really appreciate it. It helps us to do more stuff. And
yeah, and the only credits we have in our videos are of patrons.
Right. Yeah, right.
That's it. And it's not everybody, whatever we do, the level, $10 or $20. But,
right.
I mean, that's the only credits we have. That's what makes a lot of it possible.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and so those of, you know, we've had some patrons have been there for a long time and some come and go, and that's fine. And that's, you know, we really appreciate everything. Even if you're, you know, you just support us a little bit here and there, that's awesome. And, you know, if you just watch the videos and you comment and you're there every time, like we have lots of people who always comment, you know, they're super appreciated well. So,
yeah, and as well. Yeah, I've given, even if you stop in and do a thing for a month or $2. Yeah. I know when I like when it's like, hey, text in this number and donate $2 to whatever. When I do it, I'm like, you're welcome. I gave you these $2 now, you know. So I know what it's like when you actually finally decide to even like look into it.
Yeah.
And I think is what when we wrote on there, like, hey, thanks for even like looking into it.
Right, exactly.
Because like, it's rare. Like a few times a year, I'll look into like maybe giving money to this or that. And once you've made that step, that's big. That's cool too. But
yeah, right.
Well, we do appreciate it, and it means a lot. And we just spend it on more gear.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Yeah, it all just goes back to the channel. You know, it's like the money we get from AdSense and stuff. You know, that goes into our bank accounts, and we use it for whatever normal adult life stuff. But the patrons, you know, that the Patreon and you know, when people buy stuff from Teespring, those, that stuff is all just goes back into the channel. You know, we usually will pull it as a lump sum and decide to spend it on something like our new camera, you know, so.
Right.
So, yeah. So we just like thank everybody. And if, you know, if you want to support us that way, you can always check us out there. And then obviously the biggest support is just go over to YouTube and follow us there, support us there, you know, subscribe and like and comment and watch the videos and go along on this journey with us. Cause you know, a lot of these videos are made for the people who have been along the way. You know, they already have seen some videos and they know what it's like. And, you know, they know Sadie and they know the shop elf and, you know, those people, we love that community. And then we love all the new people who come in too. So if you're listening for the first time or you're checking out our videos for the first time, or you're following me on Instagram for the first time, welcome. Welcome to all the new followers. Cause we see you coming in all the time and we appreciate it. And that's it, guys. Thank you so much for listening. It's been fun. Episode 40. It's crazy that we were 40 episodes in.
Woo.
And we're going to keep on going. Thank you guys all so much for listening and for watching and supporting us, and we will talk to you next time.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply. As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.